Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Not Another Teacher Podcast with me, Martin Malone.
And me, Poppy Gibson. I'm so sweaty right now. My mouth's gone dry. My mouth's gone really dry. Oh. Sorry.
But we're here to help you protect your mental and physical health so that you can thrive both in and out of the classroom. And as I said, Poppy's a little bit excited today because we've got a little bit of a different episode. For the first time ever, we've got someone joining us, and you'll probably know him from BBC Bite Size, his own podcast, Help Me, I'm a Teacher, or possibly just from his hilarious videos online. It's, of course, Mr. Jordan Firth.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here.
I apologise. I'm fangirling big style. I can only apologise.
Do you know what? I've got to admit, talking about the videos as well, I love them, but I always think there's an extra layer to it, which, like, I think teachers are always more probably impressed with. The fact that I imagine a lot of them are either just before school or more probably, like, just after school. And the idea of, one, having, like, the effort to actually do that after school and still, like, the idea, like the functioning brain to actually even like think of an idea, which is even half decent, not like the yours are brilliant, but even just to get words out in a sentence, like it's absolutely class.
Someone said to me once before, like, oh, you've got too much time on your hands. And I really don't. And when people think, have you got all this time to do these videos and stuff like that? I just have really poor time management and really poor priorities. So I have the same amount of workload as everyone else. I'm really good at avoiding it and doing other things.
Do you know what? We've spoke about this before, and I said, like, I was the same when I was teaching. Like, my biggest thing wouldn't be how can I do the work. It'd be how can I avoid doing that work, like, forever? Like, what can I do now, which means I never have to do that again.
Yeah, I think that's something you learn, isn't it, as a teacher. You learn to prioritize what is and isn't important. We could all have a to-do list that would never ever end, and I think that's the difference from when you're an NQT or an ECT to an experienced teacher. The workload doesn't lessen, but it gets easier because you kind of know what to, like, give your time and energy to. And so mine is all the important stuff, and then if I want to make a daft video for 10 minutes at the end of a day, I'll do it. It's fine. That's 10 minutes instead of just zoning out and staring into space that I could have been doing. Yeah. So I get the time from somewhere. It's fine.
And I must say, like, sorry, Martin. Like, I think that the thing that we all love about Mr. Firth's video content is, like, you're picking out some of the worst bits of teaching, but the bits that we secretly all love and understand and relate to about teaching. So, like, I love that video you did the other day of you driving to work, like, listening to, like, Eminem or whatever. And Martin and I have a think about swear words as well. We've talked about this. But then as soon as you get to school, you're like, do-do-do, like, all guys. And I love it. Like, so much relatable content. Thank you. Thank you for everyone.
I think as teachers, very rarely do any of us have a unique experience in our entire life. And I think it's really easy to pick out. You know, you'll watch something. I do it all the time. I'll watch something on Instagram and I'm like, how have 50,000 other people liked this? And I thought that was just me that did it. Well, I literally don't think I've ever had a unique experience in my life. But so much of teaching is so relatable. And I'll sort of go on to it a bit later. But it's so easy to be able to turn that energy and those relatable things into a rant rather than into sort of expending it in a humorous way or making light of it. And so it's kind of my way to sort of, it's my outlet. It's my way to sort of decompress and sort of be a bit creative in that way and get it all off my chest, but just in a more positive way.
Well, we appreciate you and we appreciate that you do that. So please keep doing that. look. Guys, we're only like 5 minutes in and I want to ask loads and loads of questions. So, right, I'm going to kick off. First question, Mr. Firth, the one we all want to know more about. Can you tell us your career journey right from the start, since you were like baby Mr. Firth, up till today?
I don't particularly have a very inspiring sort of like getting to teaching story. I think when I was younger, it was never, ever like a goal of mine to become a teacher. I think when I was younger, I don't know, I wanted to be a Power Ranger or something like that. Like, I've never been someone that sat and played teachers or even necessarily had that standout teacher in my life where I can really go, they have inspired, like, I want to be that person. Mine, I did design at uni, and then after design, did what every person with a design degree does and worked in a coffee shop for a bit because I had no idea what to do with it. And I was explaining about, it's like a type of tea to a customer, and she just said, all right, that's interesting. You'd make a good teacher. Clearly wouldn't make a good salesman because she didn't buy it. But that kind of stuck with me, and it's sort of like I planted a bit of a seed, and I sort of did a bit of volunteering in schools. I've been a TA as well, and just thought, yeah, I love it. Like, I absolutely love being in this environment. So trained, I think I got my first job in 2015. I've been teaching for in the same school. In between that, during lockdown, I did work for BBC Bite Size. They sort of picked me up from Twitter and the videos and stuff that I was doing. And so did a bit of presenting and some work with them over lockdown. And now I lead year two. We're a four-form infant school. So I teach year two full-time, lead year two, and every now and again complain about glue sticks on Instagram. That's about me, up to date. Yeah.
Wow, that's a big school, four-form entry school. That's a lot of year twos.
Yeah, we're just an infant school, but yeah, 120 year two children. Yeah, 360 kids in the school, which make, I was talking on my podcast, for some reason, you know, like on the Friday, you'll do like your certificate assembly, and we've got like 360 kids that are aged 4 to 7. So it's a bit of a juggling act to get them all to listen anyway. I've done that assembly 4 times this year, and every single time I've done it, it's been some sort of non-uniform day. It's either been comic relief, or they've been sat in their pajamas, or in like football shirts. Now I feel like I just wheel Mr. Throw him under the bus. He'll do it. It's fine. So it is. Yeah, it's a big school, and when you stood in front of them all, then you really notice it.
Oh well, they're so lucky to have you.
That's it. And do you know what? I always think those four-form entry schools are like the nicest ones as well. Like, I think there's something about, because generally when it's four-form entry, it is like you said, isn't it? Infants and juniors are like split. And I think that means that you can like really focus on it. Because sometimes like it's so hard trying to pick something that year six are going to get excited about and reception.
And yeah, it's isn't it? We're really specialised in what we do, especially because it's only 3 year groups. It's really good for sort of, for camaraderie as well. Like, we've got 4 or 5 year two teachers and then quite a big team of year two TAs, and we all bounce off each other and, you know, share ideas, and there's got to be a bit of consistency across the board. But it's so great for sort of camaraderie and morale and stuff like that, that you've got so many other people in the exact same boat as you in that school. It's it's great.
Nice. I like it. And probably a good place to come off that is definitely to think about, like, with that in mind, all the camaraderie and sticking together, what would you say is like your favorite ever day in teaching?
I think it's a difficult one to answer. And I'm not going to cop out of it by any stretch, because I could think of loads of sort of days in teaching that will like stick with me long after I've been a teacher. And the sort of the experiences that most people have had, like sort of little light bulb moments, or just knowing that you've been a bit of a rock for a particular child for that year, or at the end of the year last year when the parents bought me, or one of the children brought me in a mug, you know, you get an end of year gift, and it was a picture of, it's a mug with a picture of me on it that a parent had taken during sports day of me celebrating my class winning the overall thing, like I just scored the winning goal at Wembley, like going absolutely nuts. So things like that are great. But I think when most people ask me about my job, and people that aren't in teaching, and they say, oh, do you like it, you know, I always go back to, is IKEA's slogan the wonderful everyday? Because that's the thing that I always pick up on, is I love my day to day. That sort of 9 till 3:30 that the rest of the country that aren't teachers sort of perceive that we all do. We rock up at 9 and go home at 3:30. But that particular part of my day is why I do it. It's my favorite thing. I think we're so lucky, especially in primary, that you are responsible for these 30 children for a full year, especially when they're so young. You get to experience all their you get to catch up with them after Christmas or after their Eid celebrations or when they've been on a plane for the first time, and you get to build those really solid relationships all year. I adore being in the classroom with my class. And that's my favorite part of it. So I know it's a bit of a cop-out answer, but I do love the sort of the day-to-day of it. And I think I'm really lucky still that I do enjoy that, because there are a lot of other elements of teaching that can pull you down and make you forget about the rest of it. So yeah, I still hang on to that and still look forward to it.
Nice, that's quality.
I love that. And I think it must be nice teaching year two, especially because your school split. Do they feel like the big bosses as well? Do they have like that big fish energy going on?
Absolutely, yeah. Especially at this time of year as well. Especially at this time of year. And it's weird, isn't it? Because they're only 6 and 7. And you usually get that from year sixes, don't you? But they do perceive themselves as being a little bit older. We're at the time of year now where I've never particularly used it as a threat around Christmas. But, you know, like parents go like, well, look, it's up to Christmas, like Santa's watching. And I don't do that, but I do every now and again go be like, look, you can't do that in junior school. So like, I tell you what, you're going to have to be lining up better than this when you go to juniors. They're not going to accept it. So it's quite good. I can use it as a bit of a threat as well.
Oh, I love that. Do you still get to see them when they do move up to the other half of the school?
Yeah, so the junior school they are completely separate schools, completely separate entities, but they are right next door to each other. So their playground, actually, I can see it from my classroom window, so I'm constantly getting heckled.
Oh, I love that. Goodbye is just see you later when the summertime comes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and my classroom door, sort of on a morning, the junior school children sort of have to almost walk past it, so I'm constantly getting harassed. So I'd see them, I see them quite a lot.
I love that, because it's lovely watching them grow, isn't it, after they move on. I love seeing them go up through the school. That's really nice. Martin, I've just checked what question I've got next on my clipboard. I'm going to be a bit of like a Donny Downer now, okay? So question 3, what has been your hardest moment in teaching?
It's a difficult one, because I think there are a lot of really difficult elements to the job. I think especially either as a class teacher or if you move into leadership, I think about our sort of safeguarding leads and things like that. And when you've got, I don't know, maybe like a challenging child in your class, and then you'll learn a little bit more of the context of their life. I think when you do start to build those sorts of relationships with children, and then you dig deeper into sort of what their context is like, it can be really, really heartbreaking. And there's been like a few kids that I've just gone, I'll just take you home. I'll just be a Miss Honey and I'll do it. I'll take you home with you. So sometimes those moments are really difficult. I think for me personally, I always remember my first half term as an NQT. I remember being sat on Google going, career moves for teachers, transferable skills for teachers. What could I do instead of teaching? Because I don't think anything prepares you for the sort of, I remember describing it at the time to someone as being like hit with a train of responsibility. Because when you are training, you're borrowing somebody else's class, and the book doesn't stop with you. You're doing it through support, and it ultimately, it's still with the teacher. And just being thrown in, look, these 30 kids are your responsibility. You decide what reading stage they're on, what interventions they're going to, what you're going to teach them, the planning. And you're like, whoa, like this, what do you mean? This is my decision. I'm just, you know, I'm early 20s. I've just qualified. I'm supposed to get them from here to here. And I found that shift in responsibility really difficult to manage. And since then, you know, I think, like I said at the beginning, you learn what to prioritize and what you need to give your time and energy and attention to. But that was that first half term I found really difficult.
What do you think changed with that then? Do you think you kind of learned as you adapted, or was the things that you took a note of? Like, why? Obviously, you were looking at different jobs. What do you think stopped you from like going to those other jobs?
I always wanted to finish the NQT year, so it was never a real option in that exact moment in time to leave. And I think once you've done everything once, you know, it becomes a lot easier. And you learn, like you say, what is and isn't going to matter. Because I think when you're in NQT or when you're in ECT now, you assume that all this box ticking that you've got to do, everything that you're being asked to do, really, really matters. Like, oh, this is so important. And you kind of learn what is and isn't, and where I am going to focus my energy and what is going to make an impact. And I think sort of becoming a little bit more disillusioned with it all helps sometimes, because you learn what to sort of allow to get to you. And now I kind of just laugh a lot of it off. That's kind of my coping mechanism nowadays. So,
you know, I think that's great. Like, the not obviously being disillusioned with it's great, but it's that thing of like learning, like, do you know what? Because you're right. Like, when we've all gone, we all probably did it. Like, I'm going to do everything, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. Yeah. But it is that thing, isn't it? Learning, like, okay, well, what don't I need to do? What is important?
Absolutely. And you wouldn't want to crush anyone's spirit. And you'll see ECTs like bouncing into schools, or you'll follow them on TikTok and stuff, and then like, come and look at me, and I'm getting in at 5:30 to create this beautiful Hessian wall space, and I'll be like, give it 2 years, and I don't for any second want to dull anyone's sparkle, but I'm just like, nah, give it a couple of years, you won't be doing that.
But now, I
trying to find perspective, doesn't it? It takes time to
but
also, I think, become more of a realist, because I think you're right, Jordan. We all start out with that sparkle, and you don't lose it, but it just maybe gets a bit buried. It's still there for sure. That's why, you know, we stay in our careers. But yeah, I think we just become more realistic. I think you're sold a dream, aren't you, when you train to be a teacher? And like you said, Miss Honey, yeah, we've all seen Miss Honey. Like, who doesn't want to be Miss Honey? But yeah, and I think it's important that in a way it also teaches us to be more vulnerable, doesn't it? And to that everything isn't perfect in life. So those hard days teach us stuff.
I think that's it, isn't it? And it's just understanding that, isn't it? It's just knowing that kind of... I remember one of the best pieces of advice that I ever got was he was the head, but he was the deputy at the time. And he just said, listen, whatever you don't get done, it's all right. And I was like, if you don't get a lesson done, if you don't teach a lesson, if you don't get all the subjects done, if you don't get all the paperwork done, it's all right. And I went, oh, okay. And I just stuck by that rule. He was like, to get to a certain point, like, if it needs to be done for the next day, you'll get it done. Like, it'll be all right. And I just lived by that and kind of built that. And I think that's the same thing, isn't it? It's learning that, like, not everything has to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And you can't, do you know what? You can't do it in teaching, even though everything tells you that everything in teaching has to be perfect. Like, every lesson has to be perfect. Every book has to be perfect. Everything has to be perfect. And it's also impossible to do it.
Yeah, I remember one of the first ever things that one of the tutors said to me on my teacher training course was, you cannot be a perfectionist as a teacher. That was the first, I remember, and that really stuck with me. Like, it's impossible to be a perfectionist if you're going to be a teacher. And you could see, like, a lot of people in the room that, because I don't particularly feel like I am a perfectionist anyway, but there was a lot of people in the room that you could see that's how they saw themselves. And they were like, with all the, like, the notebooks and stuff, like, what do you mean? And they've got, like, this perfect, like, I don't know, fancy notebook and pens and all that sort of stuff, and they were going to set out their first ever lecture in this and take some beautiful notes. And I'm like, what do you mean I can't be a perfectionist? But it is, it's so true. It's never going to be perfect. And yeah, you wouldn't want anyone to become disillusioned, but I agree with you, Poppy. It's about being realistic with things.
Yeah. 100%.
Right, let's make it a bit more upbeat.
Okay, go.
With the next one.
I feel like we've been good cop and bad cop. Like, I don't like being the bad cop. Jordan, I'm normally the good cop. Can I say Martin's normally bad cop? We are switching.
So for this one, what are three things you can't live without that get you through the week?
Oh, tricky one, I think. One of my biggest ones, I think one... sort of staring into the void at the end of every day, either on my chair once the kids have gone home, or, you know, like when you drive home and you park up on your drive and you just physically can't bring yourself to get out of the car for 5 minutes. I love those points on my day. I don't think I could get through a week without doing that. So they, you know, that's important to me. I value that time staring into the abyss. The second one, I think you've done a reel on this, Martin, a meme on it a while back. And I think one of my biggest things I couldn't get through a week without is sarcasm.
Yeah.
Now, you are told when you are a trainee to not use sarcasm as a classroom management tool or anything like that. And I don't necessarily use it as a classroom management tool. I use it as sort of a tool to protect my sanity or the sanity of other adults. And I think as teachers, it's quite a passive aggressive profession in terms of the things that you hear teachers say, like, and you can be really adamant that I'm not going to say things like that. I'm not going to say what my teacher said to me. And at some point, the words will slip out of your mouth, something like, look, I've got my GCSEs. It's so, how passive aggressive is that? Or, you know, when you're like, well, I'm here till 5, it's your playtime, I'm not bothered. And it's like, so passive aggressive. And I don't think anyone could get, any teacher could get through a school day without doing that with the best will in the world. So we all do it. And I would struggle to get through any day just protecting my own sanity without doing that. And my third one, on a more serious note, my third one is, and I'm not just saying this because you're here, Martin, but I do train a lot. I train 6 times a week, and I'm not suggesting for 1 second that going to the gym specifically gets me through a week, but it's that hour or so that is just for me that I know I can't physically map my books in the gym. Yeah. And trust me, I've tried. I can't physically plan a lesson when I'm there. It's not doable. I have to, when I'm in there, there's no temptation to do anything because I can't. It's an hour to focus on me. And there are loads of good stuff that comes with training physically and mentally and all that sort of stuff. But that's no different. My answer would be the same if it was something like I put my phone on Do Not Disturb and watch 3 episodes of The Office. Or just as long as I've got that time where I can realize that there is other things out there, because teaching is really consuming, really all consuming. You could spend your entire September to July thinking about it. And so you need a lot of moments to be able to detach from it. And so my particular thing is training, but for anybody, whether it's baking or whatever their sort of thing is, I need that. And I'm pretty good now at making sure I'm really strict and giving myself that time. So, yeah, a serious answer there.
Yeah. I love that. Do you know what? I was exactly the same when I was teaching, though. The big thing for going to the gym was that you couldn't do anything else.
Yeah.
That you could switch up. Like, you can't do anything else while you're there. And I think that's the bigger side of it, because I found what was really mad was, like, probably both of you will be the same. When you're teaching, you're speaking to your friends. I'm realizing that, like, at 5 o'clock, they just stop working. And you're like,
yeah.
What do you do after that? And they're like, I don't know, just stuff for me. Yeah, but what if you've got to finish something? I'll just do it the next day. Like, that for me was always the thing. Like, you're always thinking about it. It's always in the back of your mind. You're always, and when you go to the gym, as you say, you can't do anything else. And like sticking your phone on Do Not Disturb is great, but there's still always that temptation just have to look at it, do this, do that. But when you're doing something, just relaxes you, doesn't it? And that's it. That's why I used to always, every night I'd go Monday to Friday just for that thing.
Okay, well, you two are talking about gyms, I'm going to tell you my gym story, because I feel like I also used to find space in the gym. So when I was an NQT, as it was called, so 21 years old, I joined the gym. I won't name the gym, but do you know what you could get at the gym? Free Coca-Cola. Other Cokes are available. And you could get DVDs for £1. That's how old I am. So I used to go sip a Coke while flipping the DVD catalogue and then take a DVD home. And then I gradually realised that wasn't worth £30 a month. So I didn't go anymore. So that's my gym story. But the same as both of you, I found those mindful moments, you know, looking through the movies. It was still good. And I think I also love the first one you said, Jordan, those moments of the abyss. Oh my gosh, I'm the same. I get home and I'll just sit in my car because, you know, once you go in the house and you've got to walk the dog, make the dinner, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I love that. That's really cool. For anyone listening, like, don't be afraid to pause. My one is when I get out of the shower, just lying there on the bed, like on socials for ages, scrolling. Like, I don't want to get dressed right now because once I'm dressed, I'm going to have to do stuff. So yeah, really, three really good tips, actually, Jordan. Thank you for sharing that. And now the last question, but actually I feel like you've kind of given us so much advice, but last question, if you could offer just one best piece of life advice, not necessarily just teaching, but just advice for all our listeners who may or may not be teachers, what would that advice be?
I think it's unsurprising that I'm going to reference humor in this one. One of my favorite ever quotes is by someone called Henry Beecher, I think he's called, and he was alive like 1800s. I think he helped. He was quite key in abolishing slavery and stuff. So he, you know, he had a lot of things going on in his life. But he said, one of my favorite quotes is, "A person without a sense of humor is like a wagon without springs. It's jolted by every pebble on the road." And I love that. The reason that I do those sorts of videos and that I am how I am is it's the best way to make sometimes the unbearable bearable. Like, life is so much easier when you've got a sense of humor. You can, you know, you can soften some of the worst blows that it that life delivers. And that, I think I've mentioned before already, humor is sort of my coping mechanism, and it is my way to process things and to have a bit of an outlet. But it's so easy, I think, in teaching or in life to lose that sense of humor. I think especially when you become a teacher, I think, because we'll all have a memory of a teacher who we perceive to just have no sense of humor. Like, they've totally, and at some point, I'm sure they still did, but at some point they will have done. They were all kids at one point. They all found things silly and funny. And I think it's so important. It is what gets me, the main thing out of those three things, is what gets me through a week, just having a laugh in the staff room at the end of the day, just making light of it is, yeah, that's my best piece of life advice, is to not, just don't take it too seriously. So
I love that. I think if anyone needs inspo, if you haven't seen Mr. Firth's videos, go now straight after this podcast, because they will make you laugh.
You know, I think it's so good in that as well, because I think in teaching it's so easy to just lose all that humor, isn't it? It's so easy to just be sucked into the job. And I think that little bit of humor just breaks it up.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of helping you, but everyone else as well, aren't you? Because people will see those videos, they'll laugh and go, "Oh, I thought that was just me," and stuff like that. And stuff like, it's annoying when the glue sticks run out, and it's an absolute pain. Having that little joke about it just gives it that little bit of relief, doesn't it?
Go on.
Either
like for other professionals or for the children, like, I maintain it in the classroom and it humanizes you, doesn't it? It massively humanizes you. And if something's funny, just laugh at it. Like, I do it all the time, just laugh at it. And obviously have a cutoff point. There's boundaries and there's a time and a place, and there's a bit place where you need to stop, and you help the children to find that line and know when to stop. And yeah, I think it'd be very easy for me to go on, say, Instagram and do a story or a live or a reel about, the budgets in education are awful, I don't have enough glue sticks, or all this sort of stuff. I could frame it in that way. I could rant about Ofsted if I wanted to, but I don't choose to use it as an outlet like that. I choose to sort of just see the funny sides in it.
I think it's powerful. I think it does it. It helps you soothe and helps you heal, but it also does it for others as well, because they get that as well. Like the photocopier one I was watching before, and that made me laugh.
Can I say that's still the same for us teachers at university? So I still relate. Still true. Any classroom, anywhere.
But no, it's been absolutely class. That, I think you've shared a lot of value there. I think
people
have got a little bit more insight into you. Probably the best thing as well is probably the best place for people to find you. Like, where'd be the best place for people to find you?
On Instagram. Now, I don't know what my handle is. I think it's Mr_Firth, but Mr. spelt like M-I-S-T-E-R. Mr. underscore Firth. It's probably the best place to find me. Although, as my work colleagues are saying at the minute, I am completely unavoidable wherever they
live.
And any form of social media, we're like, you're always there.
People can come meet you in real life at the Teachers Talk primary event in Manchester, Saturday, 29th of June. 2024, in case you're listening to this in like 2030, you missed it. You missed a good one.
and it was groundbreaking as well. You missed a it really was. Inspiring. People use the word Mandela, and I thought, you know, I don't want to put myself in that bracket. Yeah, you missed a good one.
Good memories of that.
Good times, yeah.
But now, I think it's been absolutely class. Just before we go, though, just one question I had there, which just popped into my head. Obviously, you are everywhere on like social media at the minute. Your videos are popping up everywhere. Do any of the parents ever say anything, or have you had any comments off them? Or
no, I've had one child say to me, because I did one where me and a colleague hid loads of little tiny old ducks, ducks
around school. That was my first one of yours, yeah.
And obviously the kids saw them and they had no idea where they'd come from and stuff like that. And it was mainly for the staff, but we'd put them in a lot of different places. And a child has come up to me and said, my mum showed me your TikTok video. I know it was you. I was like, well, shh, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone.
Rambled.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I've not. I feel like that might be quite a good thing for now that no parents come up to me and said anything. So long may that continue.
Yeah. I'm listening in private. If any of Mr. First parents are listening, don't tell him.
Don't tell him. Ignorance is bliss.
Oh no, class. It's probably a good place for us to wrap up then. I think it's been a really good one. Thanks for coming on. First ever guest we've had on.
Thanks for coming. Anytime.
Thank you for asking me.
But now, and anyone who's listening at home, like obviously, if you can leave us a review, that'd be amazing. And it'd probably be a good idea as well to check out your own podcast as well, won't it?
Yeah, Help Me, I'm a Teacher. It's called, we help people that send in little, I don't know, agony aunt style queries and questions about things that they're going through. And I'll be really honest with you, we don't do a very good job at solving them. But we try our best.
It's the thought that counts.
Absolutely. There we go. Absolutely.
All right. We'll wrap it up there. So I guess we'll finish there. Bye now, everyone.
Bye.